Ford had his own code of ethics. It wasn't much of one, but it was his and he stuck by it, more or less. One rule he made was never to buy his own drinks. He wasn't sure if that counted as an ethic, but you have to go with what you've got. He was also firmly and utterly opposed to all and any forms of cruelty to any animals whatsoever except geese. And furthermore, he would never steal from his employers. Well, not exactly steal. If his account supervisor didn't start to hyperventilate and put out a seal all exit security alert when Ford handed in his expenses claim, then Ford felt he wasn't doing his job properly. But actually stealing was another thing. That was biting the hand that feeds you, sucking very hard on it, even nibbling it in an affectionate kind of a way was okay, but you didn't actually bite it. Not when that hand was the guide. The guide was something sacred and special. But that, thought Ford, as he ducked and weaved his way down through the building, was about to change. And they had only themselves to blame. Look at all this stuff. Lines of neat grey office cubicles and executive workstation pods. The whole place was dreary with the hum of memos and minutes of meetings flitting through its electronic networks. Infinidim Enterprises, Ford snarled to himself as he stalked rapidly down one corridor after another. Door after door magically opened to him without question. Elevators took him happily to places they should not. Ford was trying to pursue the most tangled and complicated route he could, heading generally downwards through the building. His happy little robot took care of everything, spreading waves of acquiescent joy through all the security circuits it encountered. Ford thought it needed a name, and decided to call it Emily Saunders, after a girl he had very fond memories of. Then he thought that Emily Saunders was an absurd name for a security robot, and decided to call it Colin instead, after Emily's dog. He was moving deep into the bowels of the building now, into areas he had never entered before, areas of higher and higher security. He was beginning to encounter puzzled looks from the operatives he passed. At this level of security, you didn't even call them people anymore. The truth of the matter was that all sorts of highly dodgy stuff went on behind the cheery, happy-go-lucky front that the guide liked to put up, or used to like to put up before this new Infinidim Enterprises bunch marched in and started to make the whole thing highly dodgy. There were all kinds of tax scams and rackets and graft and shady deals supporting the shining edifice, and down in the secure research and data processing levels of the building was where it all went on. Every few years the guide would set up its business, and indeed its building, on a new world, and all would be sunshine and laughter for a while, as the guide would put down its roots in the local culture and economy, provide employment, a sense of glamour and adventure, and, in the end, not quite as much actual revenue as the locals had expected. When the guide moved on, taking its building with it, it left a little like a thief in the night. Exactly like a thief in the night, in fact. It usually left in the very early hours of the morning, and the following day there always turned out to be a very great deal of stuff missing. Whole cultures and economies would collapse in its wake, often within a week, leaving once thriving planets desolate and shell-shocked, but still somehow feeling they had been part of some great adventure. The operatives, who shot puzzled glances at Ford as he marched on into the depths of the building's most sensitive areas, were reassured by the presence of Colin, who was flying along with him in a buzz of emotional fulfillment and easing his path for him at every stage. Alarms were starting to go off in other parts of the building. Perhaps that meant that Van Hal had already been discovered, which might be a problem. Ford had been hoping he would be able to slip the identities back into his pocket before he came round. Well, that was a problem for later, and he didn't for the moment have the faintest idea how he was going to solve it. For the moment, he wasn't going to worry. Wherever he went with little Colin, he was surrounded by a cocoon of sweetness and light, and, most importantly, willing and acquiescent elevators and positively obsequious doors. Ford even began to whistle, which was probably his mistake. Nobody likes a whistler, particularly not the divinity that shapes our ends. The next door wouldn't open. And that was a pity, because it was the very one that Ford had been making for. It stood there before him, grey and resolutely closed, with a sign on it saying, "No admittance. Not even to authorised personnel. You are wasting your time here. Go away. Colin reported that the doors had been getting generally a lot grimmer down in these lower reaches of the building. They were about 10 stories below ground level now. Colin's rampant euphoria had subsided into a kind of determined cheeriness. He said that he was beginning to tire a little. It was taking all his energy to pump the slightest bonhomie whatsoever into the doors down here. Ford kicked at the door. It opened. "Mixture of pleasure and pain," he muttered, "always does the trick." He walked in and Colin flew in after him. Even with a wire stuck straight into his pleasure electrode, his happiness was a nervous kind of happiness. He bobbed around a little. The room was small, grey and humming. This was the nerve centre of the entire guide. The computer terminals that lined the grey walls were windows onto every aspect of the guide's operations. Here, on the left-hand side of the room, reports were gathered over the sub-ether net from field researchers in every corner of the galaxy, fed straight up into the network of sub-editors' offices, where they had all the good bits cut out by secretaries because the sub-editors were out having lunch. The remaining copy would then be shot across to the other half of the building, the other leg of the H, which was the legal department. The legal department would cut out anything that was still even remotely good from what remained and fire it back to the offices of the executive editors, who were also out at lunch. So the editors' secretaries would read it and say it was stupid and cut most of what was left.